the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Here we are. It's Tuesday, and the Senate's been playing Let's Make a Deal. Last night, word came through Senator John McCain and 13 other senators, supposedly a bipartisan group representing the moderate center by their self-designation of the United States Senate. They said they had brokered a deal that would break the threat of the nuclear option, the Senate rule change pressed by the Republicans in order to end the Democrats' filibuster of some of President Bush's judicial nominees. Now, this is something that, as you already know, I think is of utmost importance. There is nothing more important right now in terms of our political scene, in terms of our cultural agenda, than getting some sanity back into the courts, correcting the judicial overreach, correcting the judicial activism, and correcting some very, very dangerous and tragic court decisions that have established precedents that have affected this culture. Just think of Roe v. Wade and Lawrence v. Texas, and you could go down the line where activist judges have been inventing rights and manipulating the law. The only way to correct that is from the bench, and that is by getting judges who will actually just interpret the Constitution on the bench, the very kind of judges that President Bush has been nominating and the very judges that the Democrats have been filibustering. And I put myself on the line on behalf of the necessity of ending this filibuster and, if necessary, changing the rules of the Senate in order to bring the filibuster to an end. And it looked like D-Day was coming today. And there had been word, of course, for weeks, especially in the last few days, that there were some in the center, as they define themselves, representing some Democrats and some Republicans who were trying to find a way through the impasse. Now, here's the problem. Any deal means a compromise. And in the system of checks and balances of separated powers in our constitutional government, the fact that the powers are separated, that's the compromise. When you have a majority power, a majority party in power in the Senate, and that same party with a president, the fact is that the American people have spoken, and that includes what they said about judicial nominees. We're electing a Senate that will affirm the nominees made by this president. I am very disappointed in this deal. I want to tell you right up front that I celebrate the fact that three of these judges are going to get on the floor of the Senate and they will be approved, Janice Rogers Brown, Priscilla Owen, and William Pryor. But I am very disappointed that this leaves in the individual judgment of every senator whether what they're calling extraordinary circumstances exist to justify filibustering judicial nominees. And the big prize here is the nomination of a Supreme Court justice. And I think this puts us in a very difficult position. I think it puts President George W. Bush in a weaker position in terms of his nomination, unless the Republicans and the Senate will make this stick. Let's just listen to what some of them had to say as they made this announcement. First of all, Senator John McCain, the man who was really the main energy behind this broker deal, let's hear what he had to say.
This agreement is meant in the finest traditions of the Senate. It was entered into trust, respect, and mutual desire to see the institution of the Senate function in ways that protect the rights of the minority.
John McCain, running for president. We already know that. He's got his feelers out. The cover story in this week's issue of the New Yorker magazine is a lengthy interview with John McCain about his presidential ambitions. I think this is going to cost him where it's really going to hurt among conservative Republicans, especially conservative Christians who understand the importance of the courts. And the very kind of language that Senator McCain has used here, well, let me just say, he is a bona fide war hero. No questioning that. But he is no political hero to me. Not when it comes to his role in the Senate. Listen to what he said. He said this is in the highest traditions of the Senate, the finest traditions of the Senate. Is that what this is really all about? Is that what the election of 2004 is all about? Is that what the culture war is all about? The traditions of the United States Senate. You know, in my weblog entry last night, when I responded to this initially, I said, what this will mean If indeed this means that President Bush cannot get his nominees confirmed to the Supreme Court, if and when that happens, and cannot get his nominees confirmed to the appellate courts and the district courts of the federal system, this will mean that at least these seven Republicans have higher regard for the traditions of the Senate than for the sanctity of human life. Because they decided that in order to protect their cherished rules, which after all are not written in the Constitution, they're merely the rules that have been previously adopted and now by which the Senate operates, changing the rules was just too high a price to pay to protect innocent human life and to protect the institution of marriage. We're going to watch this closely, but I think it's very interesting to see how the two party leaders in the Senate responded. First, let's listen to Majority Leader Bill Frist.
I will say that if the other side of the aisle acts in bad faith, and if they resume that campaign of routine obstruction, where one out of every three or one out of every four nominees coming from the president, who make it through the Judiciary Committee, who make it to the executive calendar, are filibustered, the constitutional option is going to come out again. I will bring it out once again, and once again I will set a date to use it, and I hope if that's what it takes to move this body forward, we will do that once again.
You know, just the political calculation on the table here, Senator Frist lost big because it was his task to hold his party to the fire, to hold the members of his party to the fire, their feet to the fire, to make certain, you heard what he said, he's been saying it for weeks, that every single one of President Bush's nominees gets an up or down vote on the floor of the Senate. And it looks like that's not going to happen. I do want to say in the senator's defense that I am very gratified that he made the statement we just heard, that the nuclear option is still on the table. But it is going to be harder to deliver on that option, even if the Democrats do filibuster in the future. And Senator McCain has to know that, and I think Senator Frist knows that as well. Now, those on the far left appear to be unhappy about this because they did not want even one of these judges to be confirmed. But they must be at least rather pleased with Minority Leader Senator Harry Reid of Nevada. Let's listen to what he said as he was making very clear his belief that the nuclear option is simply gone.
I support the memorandum of understanding. It took nuclear option off the table. Nuclear option is gone for our lifetime. We don't have to talk about it anymore. I'm disappointed that there's still these threats of nuclear option. It's gone. Let's move on to do the Senate's business.
Yes, with the Easter Bunny, I presume. You know, that's quite a claim for him to say that it is gone as an option for our lifetimes. Our lifetime. I don't think so, Senator Reid. It's going to be very interesting to watch. I must tell you, I'm just out of sorts on this. I guess that's pretty apparent. I think what we have here is the potential exit ramp from any route to recovery for this culture. I think that there are some, in this case it just took seven Republicans cooperating with this, to potentially set us back decades, even further than we are in terms of recovering human dignity and protecting unborn human life and protecting the institution and preserving the institution of marriage. And so I cannot see this as any happy development. I'm happy that Judges Owen and Brown and Pryor are going to be confirmed, but what this means for the future, I think it looks rather ominous. I will most happily be proved wrong if indeed events unfold and these judges are confirmed and the Democrats do not filibuster. I will celebrate being proved wrong, but I'm not losing much sleep at night worrying that's going to happen. Not yet. President Bush today stood in the Rose Garden at the White House and made a very significant announcement concerning stem cell research. He spoke using very, very articulate language about the necessity of preserving the dignity of human life and protecting human embryos. He said research on stem cells derived from human embryos may offer great promise, but the way these cells are derived today destroys the embryo. I share the hope of millions of Americans who desperately want to find treatments and cures for terrible diseases such as juvenile diabetes and Parkinson's disease. That is why my administration is completed the doubling of the NIH budget to $29 billion a year to encourage research. I also made available for the first time federal funds for embryonic stem cell research in order to explore the potential of these cells. It was an important statement by the president, an important meeting, and it was politics in the public eye, as the president was very much aware, the White House was fully aware, that the United States House of Representatives is considering a bill that would expand the president's policy and lead to the further destruction of human embryos. And the president said, in no uncertain terms, if that happens, I will veto that bill. And that's why it's so important that the president exercise that power and say so in advance. And he did. We're going to be talking today about women in the military, another move in the House of Representatives, this time to make clear that women are not to be in combat or in combat areas. Those on the left are pushing back, saying women ought to be right on the front lines. I want to know what you think. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back, America. You know, the issue of women in the military is back in the news, not just in terms of women in uniform, but women in combat. And there's a dirty little secret that's been leaking out, and that has prompted some action in the House of Representatives, and now a reaction from the secular left and from feminists and from some others. But, you know, on this program, we try from a Christian worldview perspective to really look at the big issues of life and where it gets down into the intimate spheres of personal life, because Christianity makes a claim upon the totality of who we are. And we have, from a biblical perspective, an understanding that the realities of what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman are not merely some kind of social construction that human beings have been evolving in some kind of sociological experiment. They reflect the intention of our Creator in terms of a complementarity between the man and the woman, and distinct roles, both made in the image of God, but each having distinct and purposeful roles that reflect the glory of God. And there's something deeply wrong. I think most Americans know this. There's something deeply wrong about women on the front lines of combat. And I will just say that that's my conviction right up front. Now, let me just ask you, I think there's some people who immediately say, well, you know, in view of feminism and equality and all the rest, that's wrong. Well, you know, I'm going to lean in here for just a few moments with what Leon Cass of the University of Chicago calls the yuck factor. Before we get to any solid propositional arguments, let's just imagine a picture for a moment. Let's just take one of the great war movies, you know, something like Band of Brothers or Saving Private Ryan, or the Sands of Iwo Jima, or The Longest Day, you name it, The Bridge over the River Kwai, and change some of those faces from the faces of men to the faces of women. Look at the gritty, gruesome horror of combat. Severed limbs, punctured bodies, mangled humanity, and substitute the faces of the men for women. I don't think that movie's going to make it. I don't think fathers are going to be showing that movie to their sons, and I don't think that mothers are going to be showing that movie to their daughters. Okay, let me make it even a little bit more offensive. Exchange that man for a pregnant woman. What's wrong with this picture? Now, most of you are saying, well, this sounds rather hypothetical because the Army already has stated rules and policies that say women are not to be in combat. How right you are, and how beside the point that apparently is. Because what has become very apparent is that there are frontline units who are designated as support units and logistical units that include women that are right there with the fighting forces on the front line. Now, that's the way, for instance, that we had some women taken as hostages, prisoners of war, early in the Iraq War. That's how we have some women fatalities and casualties in the midst of this war. Well, now this has reached the attention of some of our legislators, and in particular the House Armed Services Committee, that is now pushing for legislation that would force the Pentagon to prevent women from being in frontline combat units. Representative John McHugh, a Republican of New York, who is chairman of the Personnel Subcommittee, is pushing for an amendment that would require Congress to vote before women would be allowed in direct combat units. Now, what's interesting here is that this has revealed a partisan divide, which is really more about a worldview divide. But there are some Democrats on the committee who said that this amendment would send a demoralizing signal to women. Representative Vic Snyder, Democrat of Arkansas, said women don't deserve the kind of shabby treatment this committee's been giving them in the last week. Loretta Sanchez of California said that Republicans are trying to fix the terrible language that they had put in here, but it's still just something that is discriminatory against women. I could read you quote after quote from people who are suggesting that it's simply wrong that women should be excluded from the combat zone. And it's interesting that this is generally couched in the language of feminism, of gender equality, and of equal opportunity. Well, I think that is entirely beside the point. You know, I'm really not first concerned about pragmatic arguments here. I have no doubt that if you get shot with a gun fired by a woman, you're just as dead than if the gun was fired by a man. I have no doubt that women have an incredible amount of physical fortitude and endurance and patriotic commitment to this country. That is not in question. What is in question is whether we as a society lower our understanding of women and debase the dignity of women by allowing women in combat, putting them on the front lines. And by the way, in the name of equality, how can we merely allow? I mean, after all, the men who are there aren't necessarily just allowed to be there. They are assigned to be there. So already it appears that the feminists have at least many of them have at least a lower understanding of what equality means than true equality. I want to know what you think about this. I think this is a fascinating discussion. I think this is going to reveal a significant cleavage in the American population. But I can't believe that a large number of Americans, a large percentage, is ready, in honesty, to put women on the front lines of combat. But ladies and gentlemen, if you're not willing to have that happen, then something is going to have to force the hand of the Pentagon to prevent that from happening. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The issue is women in combat. What does that say about us? Are you for it or against it? Do you think that the baseline issue here is equality and that in the name of equality it would be wrong to prevent women, exclude women from being in combat? Or do you think there is a higher issue than equality? Do you think that equality just might be beside the point? And that the real issue is the dignity of women and our responsibility to honor women and, frankly, the male responsibility to protect women. You know, chivalry may be dead in the part of people who don't even know how to hold the door for women any longer. But, you know, something tells me that it really would not be dead on the battlefield. I think that men would still put themselves more on the line to protect a woman who was standing there than a man. And I think there's just something in us, and I don't think it's there by evolution. You can laugh at that. It's there because our Creator put it there. There's a knowledge deep within us that many are simply trying to deny. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We've got Jessica in Louisville. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program.
Oh, hello. My comment is, or actually I have a question too. Is it not true that at least 80% of the women that are actually in the military don't even want to be on the front line or in combat?
You know, Jessica, I do not have a percentage, but I agree with your point. Yes, even those who make the claim that women ought to be in combat are not making the claim that they should be forced to be in combat. And most of the women who are signing up for the military, and they are in large numbers, are signing up for logistical teams and support groups and drivers and the kind of things that would not put them on the front lines. So, Jessica, I think you're right. You had another point you wanted to make?
Yeah, well, my husband's in the military, and he's been to Iraq and several different wars. And, I don't agree with women being in combat. And I just think that we need to listen to our women that are actually in the military and see what they really want, instead of listening to the feminists who don't want equality.
Jessica, I want to ask you real quickly. We're going into a break, but do you think your husband would want women serving alongside him on the front lines of combat?
You know, I hate to speak for my husband. I don't think he would be comfortable with it, honestly.
Well, my guess is you're safe in speaking for him that way, and I really appreciate your call, Jessica. I think what we have reflected here is the ambivalence in the armed forces in uniform to even address this question. But if we don't address it from the front door, it's going to be resolved through the back door in a way that will not be good. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
I'll go back to the pictures I was talking about, folks. Just look at some of the big, big pictures of American military history and erase some of the male faces and put in female faces. Just think of some of those combat movies and insert female actresses for male actresses. And I think there's just something wrong with that picture. I think a lot of Americans would have a difficult time articulating exactly why it's wrong, but they would know. They would be possessed by a moral knowledge that it is wrong. And what we're going to try to do today is to put out a framework of argument for why it's wrong. And the first step in doing that is going back to the fact that the Bible tells us that human beings are made in the image of God, male and female. But in the complementarity that marks the relationship of the male to the female and the female to the male, there are distinct roles and responsibilities. And I know this is going to sound just absolutely prehistoric to postmodernists. But that means that the male is to be the protector, and that the female is to have the lead role in being the nurturer. And you know, the field of combat is the place for protection and aggression, not for nurture. Because we're not there to be nice to them. You know, we're there to do serious business. And that serious business comes with incredible risk. And with Memorial Day very close on our horizon, thinking of all those who have fallen in the wars to protect American freedom, would we want to erase a lot of those male faces and paste on female faces as what we expect in our future? I don't think so. And right now in the House of Representatives and the House Armed Services Committee, there is legislation being debated, and it's making some progress, that would require the armed services to get explicit congressional approval before women would be allowed into frontline combat units. And I think it's about time. I want to know what you think. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Mathan, calling from Birmingham, Alabama. Mathan, welcome.
Hey, Dr. Mohler. Just wanted to tell you something on 3 points, really. You know, like you said earlier, the male is supposed to be the protector. That's God's original intent. Nowhere in the scriptures do we find women on the front lines of battle, or in battle at all, for that case. And two, it's really an attack by the evil one himself, using his tool of liberalism to once again redefine male and female marriage, you know, the roles in which we are to play. And which really leads me to say, you know, if that's the case, if the male is supposed to be the protector, then it is kind of an image of Jesus Christ on the cross with the bride being the church. Do we want to redefine us as making payment for sin ourselves on the cross? And that's kind of an image of this, I see.
Well, you know, what we have in the picture of the Bible, Mathan, is a comprehensive and very honest picture of what human beings are like. And then we are also taught in Scripture what humanity is to be. And there is no doubt that we can mess up just about anything. The Bible is very honest about that. We can mess up any picture. That's the very essence of human sin. We fall short of the glory of God. We mess up the picture. But we are accountable to our Creator for what he intended, and we are accountable to the law he has given us and to his word. It's interesting you mentioned the Bible. Well, let me just mention, just honestly, there are fighting women in the Bible. There is Deborah, and you had the reign of the judges in the Old Testament. But that is an aberration, even in the history of Israel. It's not held up as an ideal, and it's certainly not presented in the church as the kind of picture to which we should aspire. Instead, what you have in God's clear instruction to his church, especially in the pastoral epistles, is a clear call for a distinct difference between the roles of men and women. And when we mess up that picture, we not only fall short of the glory of God, we lead ourselves into a path of human unhappiness and even greater vulnerability. I want to know what you think about this. Are you ready to see women in frontline combat units? If not, what would be your argument? What would you say if the House Armed Services Committee called you as a witness and said, it's one thing to be opposed to women in frontline combat units, but we're going to have an argument if we're going to put this into legislation and national policy. What would your argument be? I started the discussion by saying I think the argument has to go back to the fact that men and women are inherently different. And I began with a clear Christian statement of that affirmation. I think there are others who, using some kind of natural law argument, would come back and say, look, just from a reproductive and family context, the women have to be protected or there won't be any future generation. The physical vulnerability of women is a far higher risk for civilization than the physical vulnerability of men. What's your argument? I'd love to hear it. 877-893-8255 is the number. That's 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mohler. Well, is it a big issue or a little issue? You know, I think that's one of those judgments that really reveals how important we take the issues of gender and the right relating of the two sexes, of men and women, and the right organizing of a society right down to its military in terms of whether women should be serving in frontline military units. And I have to say emphatically, I think the answer is no. I've offered just a couple of arguments as to why. One that's explicitly Christian, having to do with what we know our Creator has intended in making men and women differently, though complementary to each other, with different roles. The man is the protector and the woman as the nurturer. And not that the women never protect and not that men never nurture, but there is a particular responsibility and giftedness given to the man and the woman. And then even from a natural law argument, if you want to start there, you can just look at the reproductive capacity of the woman. You can look at her physical vulnerability. You can look at the different strength even the different physical construction from the skeletal structure of the man compared to the skeletal structure of the woman. But I think deep down, most Americans probably feel this more as a matter of intuition than anything else. That's why when I talk about the picture, the great war movies, you just erase some of those faces of men and put in faces of women, and I think the whole picture changes, and we all know that. Let's go to Christine calling from Cincinnati, Ohio, listening on WTSJ. Christine, welcome to the program. Go right ahead.
Well, thank you. My question or my thought on this is, what about the reproductive process differences between men and women that are of a recruiting or a enlisting age?
Yeah, Christine, hang with me here for just a minute. I really appreciate that point. That's one of the major complications, and it's one that the military is not addressing honestly. I want to tell you why. The British Navy, for instance, reports exactly how many pregnancies take place on its ships and how many of its female sailors have to muster out because of pregnancy or become unavailable to serve on a ship in active duty for some time because of a pregnancy and what comes after the pregnancy. And the American military really is very tight-lipped about those statistics. But it is by any measure in something like 10,000 pregnancies that have affected the military since the beginning of the Iraq War. That's one press report, about 10,000 pregnancies. That's a pretty significant number. And Christine, let me ask you a question. Speaking as a woman, don't you think that that the whole reproductive picture here in terms of a woman's capacity to bear a child and a woman's responsibility to nurture the child, don't you think that's rather incompatible with the military context, at least in terms of combat?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I do. Call me old-fashioned, but, I just can't see this. And even as you talked about protection, I can't think of an instance in my life when I have been with a man and there's been an emergency that he hasn't gone into protective mode.
Well, God bless those honorable men with whom you have been in such a setting. Christine, I appreciate your call, and I think you make a profoundly important point. And it's a point that was especially well made in a female voice, and I appreciate you making it. Let's go to Mike calling from Payton, Iowa, listening on KSSS. Mike, go right ahead.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you.
I'm sorry?
I said I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you. Go right ahead.
You were asking about the role of women in combat. Well, to be honest with you, I'm a retired Marine myself, and I had experienced a lot of females working in my unit and stuff. And my honest opinion, I feel that females in the military really detract from the...
We lost Mike, and we lost him at a very important point in his argument there. But I can continue his thought for just a moment. Do you know that, for instance, at the service academies, the Air Force Academy, Annapolis for the Navy, West Point for the Army, and Quantico for the Marines, they've had to lower the physical standards required of cadets in order to accommodate women. And the same is true in terms of a lot of combat units, at least combat support units, the weight of the pack that is carried, other physical endurance issues and strength issues are different for women. Logistical changes have been made, even changes in weapon systems, according to some press reports, simply because of the different weight, the different strength, and the different structure of the male and female bodies. Let's go to Brian calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on WHK. Brian, go right ahead.
Yes, Dr. Muller, that the point you just made leads right into what I wanted to say, that I think it's unfair to the men on the field when you have a cliffhanger situation and someone who may have been a man in that place could have saved my life, but instead someone of less physical standard, a woman, not that I have anything against them, but she wouldn't excel, and maybe I lose my life in that situation because she wasn't up to the task.
You know, Brian, I think that's an honest statement. There's a lack of justice in making the men who are soldiers more vulnerable by the ideologically driven presence of women on the battlefield. Brian, I want to come back and tell you something else. And, you know, I appreciated hearing from Mike also, who was a vet. I had an opportunity to talk to one of my favorite veterans, a decorated Marine who was at Iwo Jima. And he told me right up front, when I asked him about the issue of women in the military and all the rest, and women in combat in particular, he said he could not imagine what it would have been like. He just could not imagine the presence of women in that battlefield. It was so horrible, so beyond description. It was such carnage that he just could not imagine what it would be like, even psychologically, to have women there. And he said something else that was very interesting. And he said something of our motivation, an important part of our motivation, he said, as Marines there at Iwo Jima, was to fight here to protect our women at home, our wives, our mothers, our sisters, our daughters. You know, I think that is a very important part of the motivation for men fighting in war. And I think if you take that away by putting women right there in the combat units, you've taken away something very, very important. Art's in Largo, Florida. Last call, Art. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just listening to your program, and I don't really have an argument per se, but I would like to just relate some facts about it. And as you mentioned in the Bible, we've had women that have been serving in that capacity for some time. But we also had it in the early days of our country where the women would load the muskets and things like that. My only concern is that if people are really that concerned about the Constitution, in the preamble it says to provide for the common defense. That means every man, jack, woman, anything that is a citizen. From a physiological standpoint, women are much stronger than men.
Okay, Art, we're running out of time. Are you saying that you think women should be in the combat units or not?
I don't like the way the question is phrased. I think
But that's the decision that has to be made, you know, whether you like it phrased that way or not. When you say yes or no, which is it?
Well, yes, because I think they have to protect their country, and we have a volunteer service. If they don't want to go in, most of the people go in now.
All right, we're running out of time here. Appreciate your call, Art. A lonely voice, but an honest voice. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. I'm Albert Mohler. Well, we never have a deficit of things to talk about, and especially right now, if you just look at the House of Representatives, you've got the issue on human embryonic stem cell research making its way through. That's a big vote, and we need to watch that very, very closely. And you also have now in the House Armed Services Committee this issue about legislation that would require the armed services to get explicit congressional approval before putting women in frontline military units. We've also have the judges issue in the Senate. This one is really, really big. And, you know, when you start watching on both sides of this, well, just consider how those who are on the left, who are fighting hard to preserve what they see as a woman's right to abortion and all the rest. Just look at how they're responding. Nancy Keenan, who is the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, that's really the largest and most active pro-abortion group. She said that her group was, and I'm quoting here, heartened that the crisis has been averted and the right to filibuster preserved for upcoming Supreme Court nominations. Now, listen to these words very carefully. We are confident that a Supreme Court nominee who won't even state a position on Roe v. Wade is the kind of extraordinary circumstance this deal envisions. If so, ladies and gentlemen, we have been sold down the river by the very people we worked so hard to elect to office. And we must remember this day. We must just absolutely nail down a stake. On the calendar, make an indelible mark. We need to write these words down, and we need to hold those who made this deal absolutely accountable. And we need to hold every politician and every political party absolutely accountable to how it puts itself on the line or fails to put itself on the line in defense of human life and the institution of marriage and the issues we hold dear. I really fear that we're going to look back and see this week and this deal as one of the most ominous and tragic missed opportunities in American history. I have to hope I'm wrong. But if the NARAL group is so excited about this deal, we got to know we are in big trouble. Now, they may be wrong. It remains to be seen. But all I can say is, when you know what kind of special interest groups are behind the Democratic Party and what they're going to do in terms of exerting pressure upon Democratic senators, I fear we're going to see a lot of senators decide that nominee X, Y, or Z represents precisely the kind of extraordinary circumstance that would justify their use of the filibuster. We'll be watching this closely, and we'll be watching it with you. We'll be back tomorrow for Ask Anything Wednesday. It's your opportunity to talk about whatever is on your mind. You set the agenda. You ask the question. Go to the website, albertmoeller.com. That's M-O-H-L-E-R. You'll find resources there. We'll keep in touch and see you tomorrow. God bless you.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.